Hello and welcome back for another RBP. It is me, Ross Bolin, here again with everybody's favorite thick bottom boy who makes the world go round, Jared Borislow. Jared, how's your ass?
I actually have news to report on my ass.
Really?
Yeah. Remember how I have a second butthole?
Uh-huh.
A story that I'll have to tell again on the pod because it's probably been like a year and a half now.
Yeah, you had a what was it called?
Medically? Pilonidal cyst.
A cyst. That's all we need to say. It was a cyst. We called it your second two-hole. It was a joke. It was near your two-hole, right? It was like somewhere down there. It doesn't matter.
It's acting up again.
The cyst is back?
I don't think the cyst is back, but that area, something's going on there. And not only that, I also have a potentially torn MCL and my shoulder.
You're falling apart.
And my shoulder was recently injured. And I recently, you remember this, I had 2 weeks of poison ivy on my legs. What the fuck is happening with me?
I don't know. You're still wearing the Mueller, though.
I am. I got the Mueller here.
I'm sorry I asked about your ass. That was a mistake. It's what they say to each other on The Sopranos, if I haven't been clear about that. It's also what we say to each other around Bolin Media headquarters. Isn't that right, J-Bone?
It is, because often, if I say my ass is fine, then you'll have to spank my tight little ass in
out
order.
Back.
Yeah, out back.
That's right.
For it to not be fine anymore, because you just don't want me to be happy, which is why you're, you know, reveling in my recent medical ailments.
Yes. Yes. No, not really, though. But on a serious note, I have been getting shelled with mental health issues, and this week, no cap. We do not do cap here, although Jared is wearing an actual hat today.
Shouts to the Texas Chain Rattlers, my disc golf club.
How about that? How about that? Anyway, the struggle's been very real as of late, and that's why your Monday episode is coming out on Wednesday. I appreciate the support and patience, but also, if you're not someone who struggles with the mental health side of shite, reach out to somebody who does today and check on them for me. And likewise, if you know somebody who's dealing with a physical ailment or challenge, perhaps a J-bone in your life, reach out to them and check on them. It's been a long, hard couple years for everyone. We need each other more than ever. Speaking of which, twice a month, we drop mental health minisodes on patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast. If you're looking for more mental health talk, at least one of my monthly columns on Patreon is mental health related usually. And I did like 100 episodes straight on mental health as like the main focus in 2020. So
half of which are on Patreon.
Yeah. And if you're new here and you didn't listen to those, then there is a ton of mental health talk in the 2020 episodes. It kind of shifted to a more serious show for several months there. And in some serious news about comedy, yesterday we lost Norm Macdonald at just 61 years old after a several year private battle with cancer that ended in a draw, as Norm would have wanted us to say. Norm was a Canadian stand-up comedian and actor, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that was sort of like the indie band you knew would never sell out, like even though they were better than all the mainstream acts, because that indie band was above all that mainstream shit and they just knew it. Like, that was Norm. Like, the smirk on his face was because he was always ahead of whatever joke anybody in the room could have possibly been thinking of. Like, you did not beat Norm at comedy. He beat you. You didn't make Norm laugh. He made you laugh. He didn't crack. You cracked. He was like the stand-up. And that was the thing that shined through in everything he did. Like, everything he was in, even the small role in Billy Madison, a film that shaped my entire comedic outlook since childhood, for better or worse. He stood out like he knew something everybody else on screen didn't. Like, he was in on his own inside joke with himself that nobody knew, and like, just maybe he would share it with you. That's what it felt like watching Norm work on screen. And then with his stand-up and his now infamous roasts, he changed the way I looked at comedy and content and conversations in life. Like, I had never seen anyone seemingly bomb intentionally, but that's not what he was doing at all. He was like telling everyone in the room that this entire fucking thing was stupid and he wasn't going to do jokes the way they wanted him to do jokes, and he wasn't going to do what everybody else did. He was going to make you all feel something different, even if that something was extreme awkwardness at our expense, so he could get a laugh. Like, somehow that was the funniest thing about Norm of all. And after his passing, social media was flooded with comics from A-list stand-ups to Z-list podcasters and F-list social media personalities and everyone in between sharing the time Norm reached out to make sure they were okay when they were at their worst with a text or a DM or a quote tweet that made my week or a reply that made one of my best friend Dave's year, like inarguably proof that Norm was that dude. And some people fake like they give a shit about others and talk a big game and use fancy words and phrases to self-profess their own righteousness. But when push comes to shove and the cards are on the table, they aren't calling that fucking bet. And Norm always called. Like, go watch the clip of him on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire where Regis has to talk him out of a 1-in-4 shot at losing $500,000 for some kids because he's a degenerate gambler. It's glorious. Like, in the moment, Regis can see, like, oh my God, this fucking idiot's going to take a shot. It was like a charity one, right?
Yeah.
So if he wins the money, whatever money he walks away with on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire goes to this charity. And he's at like $500,000. One question left or whatever. If he gets it right, it's a million. If he gets it wrong, he walks away with nothing. Or he cannot answer. And he's sitting there and he's like, he doesn't know it, but he has a feel for it. And then you see the degenerate gambler side of him like start to, and Regis gets real concerned and has to like talk him out of it two or three times before he finally walks away with the money. And it's just like this incredible television moment. Norm definitely had like his share of issues, and he shared them a lot of the time pretty openly. And as he deteriorated physically over the last several years, like, I always figured it was the gambling or the drinking that was doing it, because you could kind of see that something was off. But nobody knew he had cancer. And we always wanted, like, we always tend to make each other's legacies about our biggest struggles, like our largest losses, the battles we fought. And that doesn't really seem fair. Like, we are more than our issues. And Norm is a perfect example of that, where I think he found a way that, like, despite the things he dealt with and his demons, he navigated. You know, he made it happen and lived a long, that's a long ass career. He went too young, but I think most of us would be thankful to get into our 60s. You know what I mean? It's like, that's, you've gotten somewhere, you know, that's not dying at like 25 or whatever.
I have a note I wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
A lot of the younger generation, I mean, Norm hasn't been really relevant in terms of like pop culture to Gen Z, minus being Colonel Sanders on KFC commercials.
Which even then, they're probably like, I vaguely recognize this guy.
Yeah, one of the most recognizable voices of all time.
And just approaches to comedy and
yeah, well, I mean, acting. I am obviously more like, Burt Reynolds is his most famous character, right?
From Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. He was Burt Reynolds on Celebrity Jeopardy with Will Ferrell being Alex Trebek, and his Burt Reynolds, like, to me, that is what I always think of when I think of Norm MacDonald, because it's the funniest. His delivery as Burt Reynolds is unbelievable.
It fits perfectly with his style of humor. When he comes out in the big-ass hat,
yeah,
he's just unbelievable.
So,
man.
But the thing I've noticed is that outside of that, like, I think that is probably Norm's most objectively funny role. A lot of his stuff, if you don't get his style of comedy,
you won't get it.
He's so unfunny, but that's why he's intentionally being unfunny to a degree.
To make you think.
Yes.
And to make you have to go that extra yard to kind of be like, what's the fucking angle here? What's this guy doing?
Like, I think Norm would, like, unintentionally, I'm not like, I never watched a ton of his stuff, but like, obviously was very aware of him and like understood him as a comedian. He, I think, made things like The Bone Zone possible, right?
Yeah.
The whole point absolutely. Of The Bone Zone was tanking the podcast episode intentionally just because it's funny to say, fuck your podcast.
Yes.
It's my podcast.
Stuff
now.
Like Between Two Ferns doesn't exist if he's not like out there making ridiculous humor. Like, I'm not saying Galifianakis couldn't have done Between Two Ferns, but like that strange, weird alt comedy, like against the grain, was mainstreamed by him in a way. And it can't really be mainstreamed, which is why he never really was mainstream.
Yeah.
Like, even when he was at his peak in the 90s and when, like, I mean, I guess into the 2000s even, he was always the guy. Like, he showed up to the roast of Bob Saget and made it one of the most awkward and amazing things I've ever witnessed in my life in any realm. Sports, entertainment, comedy, medicine, just an absurd performance. Go watch any of the clips being distributed of Norm on Instagram and TikTok right now. Like the joke he told on Conan, the moth joke, Google it. Just very, 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 very few people who have walked the earth who can even pull that off. That was on Conan. Here's what Conan had to say about Norm in the Times, by the way. I've been interviewing Norm for 18 years, and he has consistently broken every talk show rule, he told the Times in 2011. He tells anecdotes that are blatantly false. His stories have always been repurposed farmer's daughter routines that he swears happened to him. When Norm steps out from behind the curtain, I honestly don't know what is going to happen. And the electrical charge comes through the television. And that was kind of, you always felt like he might tank anything he was doing just for him, like for the fun of it.
I think he was the inspiration behind Artie Lang tanking the Joe Buck Show, except Artie Lang had not one bazillionth of the tact that Norm has.
Speaking of which, I watched the film Dirty Work for the first time last night in honor of Norm. I could never bring myself to watch it after Chris Farley passed, and I found out it was his last film or whatever, because I always considered Almost Heroes his last film. So I finally watched Dirty Work last night, and it's fucking silly, but I loved it. It's on HBO Max right now, starring Norm Macdonald. And it was in the era of like Chris Farley thriving with David Spade. Right, there was like this buddy. There still is this. They make buddy comedies all the time. It's still a category that very much exists. I'm thinking of like the Will Ferrell,
Mark
Wahlberg cop movie now. So Norm tried to make his like buddy guy, Artie Lang, and Artie Lang is his co-star in Dirty Work. And Artie Lang, as you know now, mostly missing a nose from cocaine abuse, unfortunately. He's another one of those dudes. It's like this whole circle of comics in the 90s was just devastatingly fucked up and didn't have the resources to help them. Like most of the dudes I grew up on. It's weird. And it's one of those, like, it's almost like, honestly, just being a funny person. As I went through life, I was like, damn, this isn't good. Every single really funny person I know is deeply, deeply fucked up. And I don't know if that they always go hand in hand, but like Chris D'Elia was the example of a comic who tried to sell himself as the anti that. He was like, I've never had a drink, I never smoked, I had a great childhood. And it was like, wow, maybe you can be funny and normal. And then guess what? So it's like, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, man. It's like there's that thought process that I had was not correct. I think it was the negative version of it, right? People take trauma and taking struggle and then turning it into gold and something that other people can get laughs out of. That's what comics do. And it's what Norm did. Yeah. And like I said toward the beginning of this rant, it was the thing about him that was, it caught my attention from a young age. It was like this guy had something that no matter what room he was, even if it was with Sandler and Chris Rock and dudes that I thought were gods, I could tell he had something they wanted. And I was like, I'm going to figure this dude out at some point. And now he's gone. And even more reason to go back and watch all of his, if you ever watched his sports show, you watch some of it with us at our old job. We used to, our buddy Dave Ruff of the Circling Back podcast is probably the biggest Norm Macdonald fan I know. He's the dude that popped into my head immediately when I found out Norm passed. And Dave and I have watched a lot of Norm clips together and spent a lot of time laughing at him together. And Dave definitely has like the same comedic, he's in the same comedic lane as Norm when it comes to the style of comedy that he does. And, I know you watch some of those clips. Anyway, the dude is just like, he's very grating. Sometimes you'll watch him and be like, what's his fucking problem? Why can't he just do the jokes like everybody else does?
Yeah, sometimes you're like, Norm, get to the punchline. Like, why are you telling us
but
this?
There isn't one. Like, there won't be one, and the performance just ends, and you're like, what the fuck? But that's kind of the thing. It sticks with you, right? Like, that is different. At least he's doing something different. Like, why do the same thing the same way everybody else does is kind of the way I felt like he looked at it all. So it just, and why not use your weirdness? You know, that's kind of the thing I feel like he gave guys like you and me, too.
A good example of Norm is he went on The View back when The View was a live show and accused Bill Clinton of murdering a man. And then Barbara Walters is like, no, you can't say that, Norm. And he's like, I thought it was a matter of public record.
Dude, some of the jokes he would get away with, though, like, I'm telling you, like, the Conan bit starts as him saying that it's not even his bit. He's like, I got a taxi or a driver that brought me here, and he told me this joke. And then the joke is like 8 minutes long, and it's so stupid. Like, the film Dirty Work is so stupid. It's like one of those 90s comedies. These will never exist again. Like, it's an example of a script. The only way this worked is he was popular enough within the Hollywood scene to get people to let him do it. Because if you turned in this script in 2021, like, even Netflix would be like, get the fuck out of here. What is wrong with you, you juvenile asshat? It's hysterically stupid, but it's so brilliant. Like, it just doesn't... Those type of vehicles for silliness don't exist like they used to. So that's why I recommend Dirty Work, and I'll leave it at that in terms of the loss of Norm Macdonald. Rest in peace, obviously. And for those of you who never got to experience his work while he was with us, please take some time this week to go enjoy it. He was a phenomenal talent in the world of comedy, and one that will be missed greatly. This episode of RBP is brought to you by Talkspace, the easiest and most effective way for you to get positive growth going in your life today. When you're at a low point, you might feel alone, but over 50% of Americans struggle with their mental health. And as I always say, you are not alone. We all talk to our friends when we're experiencing issues, and they don't always give the advice we need. And it can be hard to open up to friends and family. And sometimes it feels easier to just suppress our emotions or hide our feelings and let things build until we break. Do not do that. Do therapy instead. Talkspace therapists give you the support you need to feel your best. They have thousands of licensed therapists trained in over 40 specialties, including anxiety, depression, relationships, and more. Your therapist can help you set and achieve your goals. You're going to be amazed at how much progress you'll make each week that you attend therapy. I've been in therapy for over a decade now, credit it with the vast majority of my personal growth and success that I've experienced. And obviously, I credit myself with the willingness to put in the work and go to therapy and do the stuff that my mind and my body and my soul need. Right? So that's what Talkspace can help you achieve. It's a fraction of the cost of in-person therapy. Instead of waiting for an appointment, you can send unlimited messages to your therapist 24/7. They'll engage with you daily, 5 days a week. And the positive effects of therapy will create lasting change in all the areas of your life, your relationships, your career, your overall happiness. A therapist can help you identify the habits and patterns that might be holding you back, and then figure out how to move forward in the right direction. You'll start feeling better with a single message when you match with a licensed therapist at Talkspace.com. And if you go now, you'll get $100 off your first month when you use the promo code RBP. That's $100 off when you use the code RBP at Talkspace.com. Get yourself a therapy routine going today, J-Bone.
J-Bone.
J-Bone. As you may have noticed, the Met Gala took place this past weekend, and social media has been an even bigger clusterfuck than before ever since.
You say, I've noticed you say gala and not gala.
Gala, are you a gala guy?
I don't really know. It's like aunt and aunt. I call it one of my aunt's aunt and one of my aunt's aunt. I don't really know what I'm doing.
I feel like we can pick and choose, you know? But social media is upset. Oh, look, AOC without a mask on. Dude, she's on a red carpet event for elitist turds, not at a Whole Foods, coughing on the cart my grandma is going to use next. You need to figure out the difference. We are packing 50,000 people into stadiums for sports again, and the Met Gala is the example you want to use for how the left doesn't get it. None of us get it. Left, right, center, we're all just trying to survive right now, folks. Back to the Met Gala. Is there an actual gala? I was under the impression it was just a carpet walk across fancy stairs. But Wikipedia, the world's free encyclopedia, defines the Met Gala as an annual fundraising gala for the benefit of the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute in New York City, which is really wild because just the other day I was thinking to myself, I desperately hope the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute in New York City has enough funds.
Do you know why they need enough funds, Ross?
Why?
Because we're very close to getting to the point where I need to buy a skeleton costume.
That's true.
And then do a spooky, scary skeletons TikTok dance because I said back in March that
you would.
If we hit 50,000 followers on TikTok, which we are on pace to do by Halloween.
You also have to hire a dance coach to teach you.
You said the company's going to pay for it.
I did. Unfortunate, but I did. And in fact, I said it on the record. So
back then, we had 400 TikTok followers.
Yeah. I am excited that our A-listers are on the fundage for the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute. What even is a costume institute? Is this where Kanye gets his listening party fits? The Met is a hotel, right?
No.
What even is a gala? Like, after they take all the pictures, do they just send everyone home? Who am I? All these questions must be answered. Turns out, the Metropolitan Museum of Art is one of the world's largest and finest art museums. The Met Gala itself is chaired by none other than Vogue's editor-in-chief, Anna Wintour, who oversees both the benefit committee and the guest list. Vogue staffers assist Miss Wintour in assembling the exclusive list of invitees. But here's basically how it works. Anna Wintour, Vogue, the staffers, they come up with a list of designers they want to participate in that year's event. Then unless one of those designers chooses your name off of the potential guest list to wear their work on the red carpet, you're a peasant and can fuck right off. Mm-hmm. If selected, you're dressed by that designer in a super silly outfit that they feel appropriate for the theme of the year, and wearing their design is your ticket to the event and eternal damnation. It is the most exclusive event in the most exclusive circle socially, maybe in the world. Which is why you see pictures of it the whole week after the fact, because it's like 500 to 700 of the most famous and influential people on earth. It's one of those things. If you get invited, you have to go, even though you know you're a douchebag forever. You have to.
And a lot of the people spend about half the time in the bathroom smoking weed. As you see every year, these pictures come out of them, of like, you know, this year it was like, who was in there? Lil Nas X was with somebody. But that's a famous thing at the Met Gala is like people
smoke weed in the bathroom?
Yeah, you ditch the party and you go smoke weed in the bathroom. And there's always pictures in the bathroom of like, holy shit, it's like two of the top 10 most famous people in pop
culture. You
know
why that exists? Because two of the top 10 most famous people in the world are going to be stoners, percentage breakdown wise.
Yeah.
And stoners are not trying to kick it out with the drunks the whole party. We retire to the restroom and smoke pot. But yeah, the Met Gala has been called the jewel in New York City's social crown, which almost makes you a terrible person by default if you're present. And the only reason I use the word almost is Frank Ocean. The tables at the event are rumored to be 200 to 300 grand.
If you're not invited, right?
No, this is for the designers. I think they still have to pay, even if they get to participate. I'm not entirely certain how the finances break down, but like, for example, Yahoo reportedly paid $3 million. Yahoo?
Who says Yahoo?
Yahoo. Yahoo.com. $3 million for two tables in 2015.
That's a lot of money to go to the... How does the Costume Institute at the Metropolitan...
What are they doing with all this fucking money? That's the thing. Every article I read, it was like... And if you're disgusted by the lavishness, just remember, it's all for a good cause. And I'm like... Yeah, but the good cause, the only thing I've been told about it so far is that it's the Costume Institute.
Which just goes to fund, what, the next year's Met Gala?
That's what I don't understand. Or costumes for someone? What the fuck?
Well, I would say this. What if they're the Costume Institute who made Left Shark from Katy Perry's Super Bowl halftime show? If that's the case, then it's well worth the money we're giving them.
True. But if you even acknowledge the existence of the homeless... You can't in good conscience attend this party. Like, you cannot attend. Like, the vampires in True Blood can't come inside unless you're invited. Like, your acknowledgement of people experiencing homelessness' very existence makes you incapable of being elite enough to enter. Very unfair.
Yeah, you have to have the mindset of, like, they just need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what are they doing? Make art. Figure it out. Like, smear your poo around on a canvas and sell it.
Lewis Hamilton, noted F1 legend and current driver, was there. And yeah, I mean,
at the Met?
Yeah, he's probably like,
what did he wear?
Just get a car. It was like a
Was it a car?
No, he should have worn a car.
We're going to make him a car.
He wore a tuxedo, but under the tuxedo, out of the left side, was a wedding dress.
Tight.
It was pretty cool. He actually looked really cool.
It's just a ridiculous amount of energy and effort and money to put toward making a group of people who already look great all the time look goofy as hell for one night. Mm-hmm. What is this? Like, ASAP Rocky showed up wearing a fertility quilt made by my late great grandmother. Elon Musk's wife, Grimes, brought a sword made out of an AR-15. And that somehow wasn't the most ridiculous accessory. Frank Ocean brought a fake green alien baby, or maybe real. I don't know. Green alien baby. Just what it sounds like. Life size, well, human size. Baby, human sized.
Yeah, you don't know how big the alien baby is.
It could have been a 100-year-old alien. I don't know how they age. Like Baby Yoda type of situation. Now that I'm sitting here and talking through it, Baby Yoda deserves full credit for the existence of Frank Ocean's green alien baby, right?
Yeah, but Baby Yoda was called the kid, so...
The child.
Yeah, so you could say that it
You're
was a child.
You're thinking of Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, yeah. I often get them confused.
Same but different, yeah. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wore a white gown that said, "Tax the rich," in huge red letters down the entire backside, and I can't even believe gown is still a word. Like, if we can invent new words, we should be able to delete old ones. We don't need gowns. We have dresses and frocks.
I mean, imagine you're anybody at this event and you see that, you're like, fuck. They're going to tax me. Fuck.
It's just the most, it's the worst read the room of all time. The Met Gala in 2021 is the worst read the room of all time. We're in the middle of an ongoing year two of an international worldwide pandemic. Economic uncertainty and unemployment have been up and down and all around the last 4 years. War, famine. It's just, we're at the point where, like, there is no excuse for something like this to exist, and yet it does, and we can't look away. But it's also kind of amazing and cool. At the same time, it's, like, totally unnecessary and disgusting. And just to be clear, you're all aware, any of us is allowed to dress like a proper idiot whenever we want. I'm a 34-year-old suburban white man who dresses like a Japanese hypebeast on the daily. You don't need a gala or Anna Wintour's permission to look like a doofus. I have never seen Adam Sandler on the Met Gala red carpet, and if Mr. Sandler isn't there, fashion is not being properly represented. The entire thing is a fucking sham. In my own personal version of human history, the Met Gala was spawned from Satan's two-hole after Lady Gaga showed up to the 2010 VMAs in a meat dress.
Yep. That's, yeah.
That was the end of it, though. Like, fashion ended there. Like, in terms of as how far we could go, it was over, right? Like, the woman wore a dress made of meat.
Mm-hmm.
Now Frank is bringing green alien elders, perhaps, to the... I just don't think there's anything left for us here, Jared. Like, let's just
bet on sports.
Let's bet on some sports, Jared. I made a move that some might argue gives me testicles as large as Nicki Minaj's cousin. I bet on the Texans over the weekend. Texans +3 after Barrett threw me a tip that Urban Meyer is a total mess. He's the coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars now. And guess what? I won.
Please clap.
If you want to be a big man winner like me or just need a sports betting home for all your betting needs, the NFL season is here. Baseball is about to heat up in October. The NBA is returning. It's all happening. And there's one place you can bet on sports and support the podcast at the same time. That's mybookie.ag. When you use the code RBP upon sign up, they've got all the live lines, prop bets, and futures you can handle for betting on sports. Also a fantastic casino and live casino for you to play while you watch sports if you want to. Code RBP when you sign up at mybookie.ag for the deposit bonus. When you sign up today, support the show, bet on sports, hit the casino, mybookie.ag, code RBP when you sign up so that they know we sent you. Speaking of sports, in other huge news.
I'm so excited, Ross.
After 10 years in online media, I am finally, for the first time ever, launching a brand to focus with the focus entirely on Houston sports. Which is huge news for all the RBP fans who were terrified October would bring Texans, Astros, and Rockets talk all at the same time and destroy this show again. Ironically, we have made a bunch of new Houston sports fans out of some of you, unfortunately, during the worst tenure for Houston sports fans since my birth. But we are coming out of that, and I know some of you not from Houston will still listen to this new show for the takes. It is a podcast and social media brand, for starters, I guess, called Banging the Can. I'm dropping the first episode this week. It will be available wherever you listen to RBP, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. Jared, you may be wondering, what's going to be discussed on Banging the Can?
I was wondering that. I'm also wondering if you can explain to people why you picked the name Banging the Can.
I picked the name because, as Houston sports fans and anybody who pays attention to baseball know, the Astros were accused of cheating to achieve their 2017 World Series title by signaling to their batters when an off-speed pitch was coming by banging a trash can in the dugout. I don't care at all. Everyone in baseball cheats all of the time, and everybody can suck it. Therefore, I have made the name of the show Banging the Can because it's funny to me. Our logo, made by Ricky Prosper, who also did our logo for RBP and a lot of
and
other
Formula Bone
logo work for
pretty much every brand we have.
Every Bowling Media brand at this point, I think.
Wait,
Ricky.
Yeah, he actually is.
Yeah. Is a trash can holding a baseball bat and a football wearing what I can only describe as douchebag baseball player sunglasses. It is double cupped up, as is Houston tradition, and filled with lean.
You need to see this. He also has a grill, like Paul Wall.
Yeah, his shiny teeth.
It's one of those logos where I looked at it, and at first I was like, Ross, you're insane for this. And the second you published it, I was like, this is the best logo I've ever
seen.
It
looks like a character from The Brave Little Toaster. I fucking love it. I'm serious. I'm obsessed with it. I'm going to make great merch with it. I can't wait to stick it on like a dad hat.
Does he have a name?
I haven't named him yet. That's a very good question. We're going to have to come up with a name. If you've got an idea for a name, holler at me at Banging the Can on Twitter or Instagram. I guess just hit that account up. Let's get it started. Might as well. Everybody throw it a follow. Throw the social accounts a follow at Banging the Can. There's a TikTok. There's a Twitter. There's an Instagram. And the first episode of the podcast and the links that you need to listen to it will be coming through those social media accounts in the next few days. So, yeah, we're going to talk about your first place Houston Texans, the Houston Astros playoff baseball that's approaching. Apologies not included. Houston Rockets have a young core. They're building a championship contender around the new young core in the post-Harden era. We'll talk about the Dynamo and the Dash as I see fit.
What about the Arrows?
They no longer exist, I don't think. I also didn't think the Dynamo existed, and they most certainly do. That really upset Houston people. That was the point when I was like, yeah, I need to do the full-blown Houston sports podcast. There was a team I didn't even know existed anymore. I need to keep up with this shit. I've got takes. Also, we'll talk about Derek Lewis as I see fit. Sports.
I have a first initial name for the mask. I want to get the ball rolling here.
Okay, you want to throw it out? The idea you got.
So it's OCC. You have a famous joke about Tanner Lannister being one of the Lannisters. Is he real?
He's not real in any capacity at all. Barrett and I invented, and I believe Dave actually, who was mentioned previously in this episode, we invented Tanner Lannister as the long forgotten Lannister cousin who was like in rehab and it had all these issues with drugs and like prostitutes and stuff.
Well, I'm putting out, how about Canner Canister?
Wow. Damn, that's good. That's a great start. That's going to be tough to beat. Let's see you bring it, gang. I want to hear the ideas. So yeah, I'm really excited. Those of you who have listened to the show for a long time or followed me for a long time know that I'm incredibly passionate about Houston sports. I'm a huge fan. I love sports in general, and a lot of general sports talk will bleed into the show, I assure you. But if you're one of my Houston people who's been an RBP listener for a long time, this moment is for you.
And this is just you.
Yeah, episode one is literally just me. So I'm going to have guests on from time to time and see where it goes from here, and I hope eventually we'll get to a point where it makes sense to have a co-host and stuff like that. But for now, it's just going to be me giving you my Houston sports takes and sharing some laughs around those topics.
Sports!
Grab your light. This is Stop the Wikipedia when you're high. Stop the Wikipedia when you're high. Seatbelt laws in the United States. Seemingly boring. Not so, J-Bone. Not so. This is actually an intro from history.com that I want to read you to hook you here. When David Hollister introduced a seatbelt bill in Michigan in the early 1980s that levied a fine for not buckling up, the state representative received hate mail comparing him to Hitler. At the time, only 14% of Americans regularly wore seatbelts. This is the 1980s. Even though the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration required lap and shoulder belts in all new cars starting in 1968. Lap and shoulder belts. You don't remember those, do you?
That's what we have now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I knew originally in like the old trucks, they just had the lap belt like you find in... By the way, I feel like a lot
Jeeps
of cars...
Too. I feel like really old Jeeps.
Well, I just thought about this right now. I want to say that pretty much every car when I was a kid, up until I like became 18 or whatever, the middle seat in the back was just a lap belt, right? Is that
I think that was often the case.
Is that not the case? I feel like nowadays they have to be all lap and shoulder.
I don't think the lap belt by itself is allowed anymore. Because, you can think about how physically that works, and it's not good for your insides. Right? It's pretty obvious that the rest of your body, shoulders not being restrained, are going to jolt forward. It's going to be bad for your tum-tum.
Yeah, and your pelv.
Pelv area.
Pelvy-pelv.
Your pelvy. Anyway, drivers and passengers complained that seatbelts were uncomfortable and restrictive, but the uproar over mandatory seatbelt laws was mostly ideological.
you almost got it. One more time.
Ideological.
Yes.
One of Hollister's colleagues in the Michigan House called the seatbelt bill a, quote, pretty good lesson in mass hysteria created by a corporate-controlled media, end quote, and wondered if the government would outlaw smoking next. Another said that anyone who voted for the bill should be recalled. The battle over safety belts in the 1980s America reflected widespread criticism of government regulation in a free society. The controversy heated up in 1973 when the NHTSA required all new cars to include an inexpensive technology called a, quote, seatbelt interlock mechanism, end quote, that prevented a vehicle from starting if the driver wasn't buckled up.
Are there cars that had this?
Yes, this was the back and forth that went on initially. It was like, okay, math and science and doctors and the NHTSA are telling us seatbelts are the move. They're going to keep people safe while they're driving cars. Obviously, your odds of surviving a car crash when a seatbelt is worn are significantly higher than if you're not. Statistics have shown this over the course of the last however many years since Gerald Ford shit the first car out of his ass. And it was still an argument, right? Like, it was still this huge point of contention as they were trying to figure out how to make people more safe with this information. So at one point, they said, fuck it. Let's make it to where the car won't start unless you click your seatbelt in. And people lost their freaking minds. The backlash was, quote, here it says, Congress received more letters from Americans complaining about the interlock mechanism than they did about Nixon's Saturday night massacre. I'll let you look that one up separately. We don't have time for two stuffed Wikipedias when you're high in one.
It's true. I have two questions. The first one, I can never tell with you. And I want to just... You don't have to answer if you don't want to.
Sure.
Do you think that Gerald Ford invented the car? This is the second time this has come up now.
I'm going to FIF.
Okay.
I'm going to plead the fifth.
Secondly, this, when you talk about the law from like the 70s where you had to be, or like the mechanism where you had
the interlock mechanism?
Car wouldn't start unless you had your seatbelt on. Do you remember those cars from the 90s where right when you turn the ignition, the seatbelt would automatically. Those were, I always wanted one of those growing up. I thought that was the coolest thing in the world, the automatic seatbelt thing when the car started.
They got those in the Lexuses. A lot of the Lexuses had, I'd notice all these rich people when they get in their car, the shit would do the thing, and I'd be like, man, that's fancy. My car don't do that. My cars don't do that.
I always thought that was really cool, but now I'm realizing that's just a way for big auto to make sure you're wearing your seatbelt.
Restrictive, taking away my freedom. I won't stand for it.
I actually feel like I heard about this where people would just lock their seatbelt in and then just sit with their back on the seatbelt, making them incredibly uncomfortable just so their car would start.
Just to show them I don't have to stick to the man's rules.
Which then I like to think, you know, when the car crashes, it tenses up the seatbelt. The seatbelt would then launch you like a fucking spring out of the fucking windshield.
Exactly, dude. So after people freak out about this interlock mechanism, Congress responds by killing it in 1974 and then mandating further that the annoying buzzing sound that indicated an unlatched seatbelt could only last 8 seconds. So every time you got in the car until your seatbelt was buckled, it would be like, for 8 seconds. I won't do the full eight. I'll spare you. This battle goes on through the 80s, through the 90s, into airbags. It's a ridiculously long saga, so it may be a while before the mask argument is solved. Buckle up, buckaroos. As of August 2020, New Hampshire was the only state without a mandatory seatbelt law for adults, which is a product, as Wikipedia puts it, of its live free or die libertarian streak, which is hysterical. You're telling me that, and by the way, as a result, seatbelt use in New Hampshire stalled out at 70% compared to more than 90% nationally, which has therefore resulted in more traffic deaths.
Instead of live free or die, it should be live free and die.
Yeah, at the same time. That's what we're going for here. I have every right to fly through my own goddamn windshield. You do. You fucking do, I guess. I don't know. It's ridiculous.
But what if they fly through their windshield and then hit the guy who has a seatbelt on?
Yeah, you're causing us to be unsafe, sir. You can't fly through your own windshield. Sorry. Put on your fucking seatbelt. It's the law. Anyway, so there's some history you maybe didn't know in the form of today's Stuff to Wikipedia when you're high. I hope you enjoyed it. And I am now wondering if there's a seatbelt buzzer option that I can turn on in the Tesla.
Ross has a Tesla.
Let's pay for it. Today's episode of RBP is also brought to you by our brand new and phenomenal sponsor, Uprising Foods.
It's an uprising, Ross, of food.
Their food system is fundamentally, our food system is fundamentally broken, and it's making us sick at scale. The people at Uprising Foods are fixing that. Obviously, their mission is to liberate all of us from a fundamentally broken food system that is stealing our health. They have cracked the code on healthy bread. You simply cannot find something this healthy that tastes this good, that's this fresh. Only 2 net carbs per serving, 6 grams of protein, 9 grams of fiber. They cover paleo, to clean keto, to simple low carb, to high fiber, to dairy free, to grain free lifestyles. All Uprising products are baked with real superfood ingredients, almonds, MCT oil.
Apple cider vinegar, egg whites, psyllium husk.
Oh, psyllium husk, olive oil. Amazing. Uprising has made prebiotic fiber delicious with their patent-pending breakthrough in psyllium husk activation, making fantastic digestive health absurdly easy for all of us.
We need more fiber. Fiber is very important to the body. I feel like a lot of people growing up, we were like soured on fiber because we'd eat those disgusting fiber crackers.
Sure.
I was like, oh, that's so what gross.
That's the thing. It all comes down to taste, and healthy foods are just littered with broken promises. Uprising has nailed the taste factor on both their sourdough-esque cubes and the crunch factor on their newly launched Freedom Chips. They're delicious. They taste like those old school rye chips you dig for. And are you super filling as well?
Oh, yeah. You know when you have a bag of Chex Mix or Gardetto's and you just clear out the rye chips first?
It's the good stuff.
This is that, but better for you by a long shot.
And Uprising is offering our listeners $10 off their starter bundle that includes 2 superfood cubes and a 4-pack of Freedom Chips to try. Go to uprisingfood.com/RBP. The discount is automatically applied at checkout. That's uprisingfood.com/RBP to get $10 off your first purchase of the starter bundle. Excited to have Uprising on as a sponsor. Excited for y'all to try them. You will enjoy them. If you're looking for more healthy food and snack options, Uprising Foods.
I mean, when you're working from home, you got the whole pantry right there. It's easy to go and get something unhealthy during the day.
Oh, it's too easy, Jared.
Put some healthy stuff in there.
It's too easy. Uprisingfood.com/RBP, folks. Appreciate you. Jared, we haven't had gaming talk in forever. Mm-hmm. Forever. I have a prompt. Give me a top 10 game from your childhood that's like not an obvious one, you know, that's kind of been like forgotten to the sands of time or whatever. You don't have to pick sands of time.
Yoshi's Island.
Boom.
Best soundtrack of any game ever, and that's including Diddy Kong Racing, which is a close second.
A lot of people are going, oh, wow, was that Jared on the soundboard just now? No, that's me just doing, bad-um. I don't know, is that close?
Bad-um.
That's better.
Bad-um. And everybody knows I have the, and Waluigi's not in this game, but everybody knows I have the best Waluigi impersonation in.
Hit us, Jared.
West of the Mississippi. I don't know what they're doing in New York these days. 1 second.
Wah! Wah! Yeah, yours is better than mine.
Yours sound like a baby crying.
What is wrong with me?
But I also,
why can't I do Nintendo voices?
I don't know. I brought up Diddy Kong Racing, which is a big competitor to Mario Kart. Also, I would say is my second entry into video games that have been forgotten that are amazing.
I would also argue that Diddy Kong Racing is one of the great underappreciated video games of all time. People kind of wrote it off as like this knockoff of Mario Kart.
It's way better.
It's completely unfair. I will not say it's way better. But I love. Here's what's hard. Take something great. Find me a new angle. Change it up. Make it interesting. That's what they did. That's very, 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 very difficult to do. Have you seen anybody else nail Mario Kart's vibes? No. The only people who ever came close and arguably did something some people like Jared may consider to be more fun even, Diddy Kong Racing.
The reason why it's more fun is because not only did you have cars, you also had hoverboats and airplanes, right? So you had 3 options for every track. Also, it had a story mode where there was this little world you went around and it had all the gates to the racetracks. You had to collect balloons from the races to unlock other gates to do other races.
Which was dope, because you and I, even though we both had a brother, you would need, sometimes I would play games with my brother to where we got to play at the same time. That was usually the goal, right? To beat the shit out of each other. But every once in a while, you needed some alone time. And it was if a game didn't have a story mode, you know, and you weren't necessarily trying to do GoldenEye, there weren't, like, this was nice to have this to turn to just kind of drive around in the different vehicles and do the stupid story mode on a racing game,
mm-hmm.
which was rare. Loved that. Loved Diddy Kong Racing. One of the weird ones that kind of, I guess, inspired my whole gaming hobby was, it really was the game that inspired my whole gaming hobby, was Counter-Strike. Did you ever play this?
So I recently tried to play Counter-Strike GO probably like 2 months ago.
The present day version?
Yeah. But here's the thing. The present day version is not updated at all.
And it's a mess. It's a mess in there, Jared.
Going from playing Warzone to playing Counter-Strike.
It's sad.
It's like going from typing on a computer to a typewriter.
The 2021 version of Counter-Strike that people actually play is Valorant.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's not related to Counter-Strike at all. It's a new game called Valorant that has kind of taken all the Counter-Strike-esque qualities and made it into a new modern day adaptable version. So, but the game I grew up on, the first person shooter that like really shaped my, you know, gaming hobby was Counter-Strike. It wasn't GoldenEye. It wasn't a console game. It was the first time I played on PC that I was like, oh my God. Cause you couldn't just have an N64 or a PlayStation 2 or whatever. This was a PC game, mouse and keyboard, fucking WASD to move around and the clicking to shoot. The scroll wheel to change weapons, all that good stuff. Like the first one of those I ever played, and it was very skill-based, like Warzone is. Right? Like it was the whole Call of Duty franchise was born out of Counter-Strike. It's like how Kanye caused Drake or Norm caused Dave. Right? It's like there's all kinds of examples, but
your Counter-Strike was my Halo. I used to play Halo Combat Evolved, first Halo. I had that for PC, and it was the first ever PC online game I played.
And don't get me wrong, I would argue Halo is the other one but it's the obvious one that everybody in my generation played. It shaped everyone I know's gaming life. If you're like all the dudes I knew played Halo, we all played together. And if you played video games into college, it was probably because of stuff like Halo that took you there. And FIFA.
Yeah, right? I love that Halo never took out Friendly Fire. It was
you could always kill your teammates with a rocket launcher.
Raging was so good in Halo, just killing your teammate with a rocket launcher.
See, you could do this in Counter-Strike too, particular maps. You could make the settings whatever you wanted. Sometimes we would go in and we would turn off the gravity so that we would just float around the damn map like shooting sniper rifles at each other. It was idiotic. It was also just mindless, dumbass stoner stuff you could do within Counter-Strike that made it even more suited to me when I was in high school because I was absolutely not trying to be not high at that point.
I loved my favorite Halo, I think it was Halo 2 map, was Last Resort. It was the one that was like, it had the beach outside, and then it was like kind of the little base, and there was, you always had to be the first one to either the Spartan laser, which is all the way at the top of the Ferris wheel.
Gotta get it.
Or you had to get to the sniper rifle, which is in the little alcove inside the cliff.
The AWP in Counter-Strike and the sniper rifle in Halo were the things that got me like hooked on video games, where I was like, yep, this is permanent. It's like golf for some people, how there's like the first time they hit a drive, they're just like, okay, this is my game forever. That was me sniping. I was, oh my God, fuck yes, this is amazing.
Ross and I both love sniping, which is...
it's a problem.
It is. Can't have two snipers, but...
but it's also fun as hell. Example, I finally played Warzone last night for the first time in probably... man, maybe only a couple times in the last 6 months I've played that I've even touched it. In game two, I got 9 kills in large part because I was rolling around with an AX-50 just headshotting everyone I shot at. It was amazing. It was like one of those things where you haven't played golf in forever and you go back and you crush it. And you're like, oh my God, am I really good at golf now? And it's like, no, you just took some time off and got lucky for one day. Now you're going to suck again. Sorry. But it was that on Warzone and oh my God, it felt good to be back. I miss that game.
It's so fun.
Just all the Call of Duty look, the feel, like all that shit is just so, again, it's a big part of it for me. A big part of gaming is nostalgia based. It is. Because that was such a fun part of my childhood with all my boys. Like, that's the thing. You got to realize if you're in 2021, I'm not sure if it's the same. But you definitely had people that didn't fuck with video games growing up as a kid in the 90s, and parents that didn't allow them at all.
Yep.
And then so as a result, there were a lot of people, and just with technology, frankly, like I've still got boys who like don't have anywhere near the latest iPhone, that don't care, that never have had it. They're just not tech people. And I don't know if people like that are born anymore. I think you have to be a tech person. It's not really a thing you choose anymore. But my point is, like, when N64, like when Grand Theft Auto, when all this stuff heated up, when the gaming culture was sort of born, when Jared and I were kids, everybody was sucked in. Like, if your boys didn't play video games ever again in their life, in middle school and high school, they still played fucking Halo, they still played Madden, they still played all the games that everybody else played because it was no longer, like, a fringe thing.
Yeah.
It broke through to where, like, everybody was gaming. The other side of the reason I don't know if this exists anymore is because, like, this whole scarcity model that Sony and Nintendo and everybody has embraced with, like, it's impossible to get one of these consoles, Microsoft being the other one, that didn't really exist. It was hard to get the N64 at Christmas when it dropped.
Yeah.
But, like, you could get it. And eventually did. And it, what the time frame for things didn't work the same because you weren't shopping online for everything. So, like, in your head, going another month without it, that wasn't a very long time. Now, going another month without it, it's like, what the fuck is happening? And the answer is, well, it's also supply chain issues, which have now fundamentally destroyed our way of life in America.
True. And speaking of scarcity, N64 games are now selling for, like, $100. Like Super Smash Brothers and Mario Kart.
Guess who's loaded up?
Are like $100 games now if you want to try to buy them. Because obviously not a lot of them, you know, a lot less survive. Some of them, oh my God, it's at my parents' house. Like, and I don't have it not here with me.
Mom sold them in a garage sale to some lady who moved to Montana and like buried all her shit in a bunker because she was scared of a nuclear war.
That reminds me of something that should definitely be a stuff to Wikipedia when you're high.
How does that remind you of anything?
Because you talk about burying a video game.
Oh, okay.
How you might have done this before.
I think I did.
The E.T. video game.
Oh, nope. Never done this.
How there is a...
Well, don't tell me now.
Okay, yeah.
We're going to do it. We got to do a segment on it if it's fun.
Yeah. Oh, it's very fun and gaming related.
Making a note.
The E.T. video game.
The E.T. video game. Right on. Well, anyway, got back into Warzone. I missed it a lot. Apex Legends has a new update, which kind of just leads me to a talking point about gaming. These games nowadays, they have to update them constantly because the model is, well, for some of them, is that it's free. The game is free. But then people are spending money in the game on stupid, frivolous shit.
Freemium!
And they make a killing this way. It's a great strategy that Fortnite was really the trailblazer with. And
they piggybacked off of 12-year-olds taking their parents' credit cards and buying $400 of skins.
Yeah, they piggybacked off the Apple App Store concept, right?
And by the way, Ross bought like every Fortnite skin back in the day, and I guarantee you have over $1,000 worth of like skins you could sell your account for.
No shit?
Oh, yeah.
Just because they're old school and they don't want to re-release?
Yep.
Damn, good point. Well, anyway, when they release big updates to these games, which they do every so often because they need to keep them fresh and keep people playing and keep people engaged and drop a new season and add new maps and add new skins and add new guns and change out the fucking entire thing. Excuse me. They tend to blow it. So they'll drop the update, and then the game doesn't work for 48 hours. And it's just mad annoying. And I don't know what's going on in these video game companies, but there's all kinds of chaos at Blizzard, the one that makes Warzone, and elsewhere, where it kind of feels like they're understaffed or under-motivated.
But they've got like 100 people working on this.
I have no clue. Like, Warzone's the greatest example ever of a game that's constantly broken and infuriating to its fan base, and yet the largest video game company like in the world. People always joke, oh yeah, small, you know, Activision, small indie company.
Yeah.
It's like, bro, why can they not figure this out and fix this? It feels like they're just not trying.
They just needed an anti-cheat, which like, nobody knows
they've
why
they
have
been knowing this since I was a child, Jared, that anti-cheat is a thing you have to have in video games. Speaking of Counter-Strike, it was a major problem to the point that finally me and my boy Jason played all the time together. Shouts to my boy Jason. He's not listening.
You started cheating?
Yeah. We installed hacks on this motherfucker's computer and just went to town. We had wall hacks, all kinds of crazy hacks. Aimbot? Shit's not fun at all. Shoots people automatically for you? The fuck? It's kind of funny to laugh about it for 20 minutes. That's it. Yeah. And you're so bored.
I've played in a Warzone game with somebody who on my team had wall hacks and he was just doing callouts the whole time.
And now keep in mind, this is when you got on Warzone, if half the people playing the game were hacking. That's how bad it got on Counter-Strike, to where it was like you didn't have a choice anymore. There was no joke. Like it was like, oh, this is ruined for now until they can fix this. I have to join them or not have fun for a while, which was not an option.
Speaking of,
go find a new game, go fuck yourself.
There's a new YouTube genre, and it's called, and you can go down a big rabbit hole here. It's called, this is what 15 straight years of playing Halo 3 looks like. So it's people whose main game is still Halo 3 or Halo 2.
That they never stopped.
And so it's usually a 3-minute video of their gameplay where they in one life they'll get the Killmageddon, like the Killtron, like they get to the point where there's no more of those. They break it to where they just kill.
Short circuits, fucking thing like turns yep. off.
And these people Damn. Are just so unbelievably good. And it could be hacked, but it doesn't look like
Dude,
it.
Dude, that's like these freaks who do Mario speed runs that have just been playing Super Mario on fucking Super Nintendo for 30 years and they can beat a level in like 8 seconds or whatever.
Oh, the ultra shortcuts, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've talked about this before. The greatest video game YouTube account is Summoning Salt.
Summoning Salt?
Summoning Salt does world record speed run story. So it'll take a video game and run you through the entire timeline of speed run events, usually with video of the run, and explains the strategies each person used to make the time a little bit better. They're usually between half an hour and an hour long. They are, even if you go, I'm not that interested in speed running. I had zero interest in speed running.
Right.
These are the most entertaining. I've watched every single one of them, even about games
Wait,
I've never
what,
played.
What gets so interesting about it? Just the way that they find time hacks, like
first
to
off,
cut time off their.
He is ASMR. It's the most, when you watch it.
Oh, it's one of those things.
It's so calming. It's like, I listen to him talk about anything.
There's weird stuff like this, though.
Not like whisper
this happens
ASMR.
To me with cooking shows sometimes.
Yeah, yeah
where
exactly.
I'm like, I don't, Jared, you know me. I am not a cook. There is not a single living human who would say anything positive about my ability to make food. And yet sometimes I'll catch myself watching that shit. I'm just like, it's the calming nature of the programming
yep.
that brings me back.
Like I'm watching this dude who's probably sweating, trying to make sure he doesn't mess up a single like keystroke or like
just like, oh wow.
But yeah, the interesting thing is finding out like what takes it from being a regular run to the current world record run. Like everybody, these are a matter of a millisecond. These dudes are trying to shave off and it's like, oh my God. And it's always about them finding out a new exploit or a new little thing. And it's like, the record wasn't broken for 3 years until this one guy found out that you can clip through one block on this level and it shows you the clip, like the thing
and
happening.
And that shows like a cascade of
yes.
record time changes.
Yes.
Damn.
It's so good. I recommend, there's a bunch of them on Mario Kart. I recommend starting off with the Mario Kart ones because those are the easiest to get into. And at
they
the
also
end,
were the most infuriating when you were a child and you would play with someone who knew one of them and he would just like be laughing like, ha 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 ha, I'm on lap 4. You just like, yeah. There isn't even a lap 4, you fucking asshole. How are you that far? What the hell?
Yeah, the Mario Kart ones are so good.
Shit's annoying.
Highly recommend. Summoning Salt.
It's crazy, man. It really is wild how far the video game industry has come since we were kids, and now the amount of money that guys like, you know, Tim the Tap Man and what's the
Dr. Lupo?
What's the fucking
Nick
Merckx that everybody loves? Nick Merckx.
He's announcing that he hasn't announced yet, but he said he's already said he's gotten the biggest deal of his entire life, waiting to announce. I want to say it's going to be in the next couple of weeks. Almost certainly YouTube.
That he's going to YouTube with Tim?
He was not confirming or denying anything, but like, I feel like if he was staying on Twitch, it wouldn't be an announcement. It would be like a casual, like, I'm still here on Twitch. I don't know. I feel like he's probably going to YouTube. And if that's the case, YouTube is almost at that point taken over.
That's pretty wild, man. It's like, yeah, the only reason we're still doing Twitch at all is because I can play music on there without having to worry about our podcast videos, which yep. are on our YouTube, in any way being connected. So yeah, it's wild to watch it unfold to where there's like $20, $30 million deal. These guys are being paid like professional athletes are being paid to play video games,
yes.
which is not a concept that like my parents, for example, like or even one generation above me can understand, because that's why would anybody watch anybody play a video game? Why wouldn't they go play the video game themselves?
When I would explain it to people, like I was back home for Christmas and I was talking to my grandma and I was like, yeah, I actually made like $150 this month playing video games on Twitch. This is back when I was doing Twitch.
Yeah.
And she was like, why would anybody do that? And it's like, well, like, I mean, it's hard for a grandma. It doesn't really make sense. But like somebody our age who still doesn't get it, it's like, you know how what you used to watch your brother play video games and you were like rooting for him? It's literally that. Like,
yeah. Or you know how you watch like
sports,
any of the sports that are made up and stupid as fuck. And the first time somebody introduced baseball and then was like, hey, you want to go watch those guys play baseball? And then some hater was like, why the fuck would I watch somebody play baseball and not play baseball? And it's like, because it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
Grandma, you dumb bitch. I'm just kidding. Jared's grandma's a wonderful woman. Almost all of them are.
Generally, yes.
Generally. Respect what's up your with, elders and call your grandparents.
When are we getting Cypher back on the pod?
Dude, he's just refusing to schedule his interview at this point because he can't stop working out for 10 minutes to fucking schedule his interview. The guy got hooked on working out. Like, I interviewed him right before I jumped into streaming, so I had no idea what I was talking about, and I want to redo. Yeah.
And you
then
said
I
this
put it
was
on Patreon, and it was a mistake.
You said it was your worst.
I didn't know what the fuck was going on. It was the worst strategic decision I've made since I started this company. And
the biggest guest you ever had.
This dude is probably the most famous person, aside from Mia Khalifa, probably that I've ever had on my show in terms of audience. He's ridiculously popular, especially with the kids. The children love him. He reached these kids with all his Fortnite videos and shit. But he got hooked on working out like right after I interviewed him or within that next year. And he's dropped like 70 pounds or something crazy. He lost more weight than I did.
He looks like a model.
Chungus and now. Yeah, he really legitimately looks like an underwear model at this point. It's kind of ridiculous. I don't know how you do that in game professionally. These two concepts don't really mix in my head. But now there's like three of these guys. Nate Hill, another one of my favorite streamers, is literally a model, which is weird.
Yeah, I mean, there's some very good-looking streamers.
Just hot dudes doubling. I guess it goes both ways. Hot chicks doubling up as a lot of streaming going on there, too. Huh?
But don't worry, everybody. There's also some not attractive streamers.
Oh, great. Great, strong majority of us are still hideous freaks. Yeah. We got you. Anyway, we'll get him on here. Cypher PK will be back eventually. It's like he agreed to the interview on Twitter. And now it's just I just can't get him to answer my text messages.
That's like a blood bond. A Twitter reply?
Pictures of my tool hole I've been sending him. So maybe soon. Anyway, it's Hispanic Heritage Month, which is important to acknowledge, as well as National Suicide Prevention Month. And there are a lot of online resources, obviously, if you're dealing with depression or suicidal thoughts or ideations, ndbh.com/suicide. That's ndbh.com/suicide. Has a lot of helpful information. I highly recommend also following the Depression Project on social media. I have bought one of their books on how to deal with depression. It has been extremely helpful for me. Unfortunately, as a result of me weaning off of the SSRI that I've been on for a few years, for the first time ever, I've had to deal with some of this suicidal ideation shit, and it's awful. It really, truly is. It's just a terrible thing. I can't imagine, for a lot of people, they have to deal with stuff like this from the get-go, their whole lives, or for long stretches, and I'm thankful that that has not been the situation for me, necessarily. It's been in small doses when I have flare-ups with my medication, but it's something that is probably a bigger issue now than it has ever been that I'm aware of in the course of human history. So like life is more complicated, difficult. We're more overexposed to things through social media and the internet and the like than we've ever been. And so therefore it is probably the most important National Suicide Prevention Month we've ever had. And as I asked you at the top of the show, if you would for me this week, just reach out to somebody that you know that typically struggles with their mental health. And don't make it so on the nose necessarily, right?
Hey, I wanted to check on you.
You're not going to kill yourself, are you? It's like, dude, chill, bro. Just ask a normal fucking question. Hey, man, how you been doing lately? That's all you got to do. Or, hey, girl, how you been doing lately? That's all you got to do. It doesn't have to be complicated. Don't overthink it. Just check in with them. Maybe they don't even respond to you. Who the fuck knows? But, like, it's about letting somebody know that you're there.
And if you want somebody to talk to you for yourself, you can obviously go and seek therapy. And one way you can do that is with Talkspace, who's one of our sponsors today.
It's one of the reasons we're so obviously happy to have them as a sponsor. Because, I know taking the steps to go to therapy, that's a challenge for a lot of people. They don't want to do it. It's awkward, uncomfortable. They've been preconditioned to think of it as something that you're not even supposed to have to do, whatever. That's insanity. Like, that's crazy. Therapy to me is an essential tool, and to be able to get it through something like Talkspace with a discount for our listeners that you can access from anywhere is really important, especially in 2021 where a lot of us like aren't trying to leave the house and shit. So, and I will add, get out of the house and shit. That will help you a lot. I think a lot of people have been stuck indoors too much this past couple of years, and it's fucking with us. Like, get out there, get outdoors. Jared and I, as well as what are we calling him?
Contract Cade.
I almost called him Content Cade. I guess that's fair too. And we've been trying to impress upon Cade and each other, like, yo, we get every day, you got to break it up. You got to get outside for a little bit, or go work out, or ride the bike, or like hit the Bowling Media Ross Fit gym or whatever. But that can help so much, even just going on a walk. And I joked a lot at the beginning of the pandemic that I would sit at my couch and watch these people walking around my neighborhood all day. Everybody was just going on walks all day, every day, bro. It was crazy. The whole freaking neighborhood. And I was just like, what the hell's wrong with these people? Well, what's wrong with them is they're all smart. And they knew that they needed to get out of their houses and get some fresh air to keep sane. And yeah, that's not that. Something I had enough respect
for. I'm going to do it after this episode.
Jared's looking out the window right now like, I could, looks could nice. I dive out of that? Right? Could I make it? Could I get out? But yeah, so reach out to somebody today, this week, and just let them know you're there. And remember that you are not alone. And again, if you're looking for more mental health content, I just tweet constantly. I can't be stopped at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening. At WR Bolin, yeah, I talk a lot about mental health on there.
It's at the point now where I don't know if what you're tweeting is song lyrics or your actual thoughts.
Nobody does, including in a court of law.
Yesterday, I Googled one to see if it was a song lyric or your actual thought.
Yeah, and sometimes they're both. So it's like, even if you find out, like, does it actually matter? No, it doesn't, because it probably is me trying to represent how I'm feeling through a song lyric. So it really does. But that's a place I go to do a lot of venting when I have difficult mental health days. And so is Twitch. If you're somebody that has been struggling with stuff like this, twitch.tv/bossrolin is a place that I spend a lot of time giving myself like some comfort through a distraction of a fun video game that I enjoy, to take it back to gaming.
And you also stream sometimes on our YouTube, which is the Ross Bolin Podcast on YouTube.
Yeah, if I'm not looking to play illegal music while I stream, then I'll go on YouTube and follow the rules.
And you can watch this episode, if you listen to it, you can watch it on YouTube and every other episode.
You can. And I will also add, interestingly enough, to tie it all together, Apex Legends, which is probably my favorite video game of the last several years, probably since Counter-Strike for me, nothing has really hit me that way, has a national Suicide Prevention Month little icon that you can put on your dude or whatever, and they've done a really good campaign around like the sort of the same concept we always have, which is you are not alone, right? Like if you need to go connect with somebody, if your fucking day has gone so wrong that you just don't know what to do, like, yo, there are worse things than going and playing a little Apex Legends. So it's just, and that applies to a lot of different like, Go join a volleyball league. Any fucking thing you can do to get yourself out there, get engaging with the other human beings is a good thing. So remember that. Go lean on the other humans and let them feed you energy. And you know, you got to pick and choose. But it's a conversation for another day, Jared. Let's get the hell out of here. I can't even talk anymore. You are not alone. Jared and I will be back on Friday with another episode of RBP right here for you to listen to and enjoy. Until then, look forward to new podcast, Banging the Can, Houston Sports.
Banging the Can.
From Ross Bolin. What have I been saying? Apologies not included. New Formula Bone, out now on social media for all the F1 fans. Go and support it. Comment, like, share.
I said to Ross, I said, I think this is the best piece of content I've ever created.
In his life.
In my life.
He's told me that's actually a large statement. It's like several years of work.
Yep. This is it. Check it out at Formula Bone on TikTok, Instagram. It's going to go up on YouTube shortly.
Formula Bone recently became the largest Bolin Media social media account on TikTok with over 50,000 followers, which is
almost 50,000.
Or almost 50,000 followers, which is some mind blowing. You've done like 5 videos. It's just crazy. Anyway, just an example of how thankful we are for all y'all's support here. That's an example of something we wouldn't get to do if not for you, and especially the good people on patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast, who support this podcast and make sure that Jared and I and everybody at Bolin Media are able to do what we do. So thank you. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about the show. Go to Patreon, support, get more RBP. Go watch Formula Bone, like, comment, share, and look forward to Banging the Can. Jared and I will be back on Friday. Peace.
Go low, baby.